Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Dusty Minkie back on the show. It's been a while since we've had Dusty on. And, well, I shouldn't say that. Earlier this spring, we had him on after the first NWT stop earlier this spring, but that season has since wrapped up. Dusty earned his spot at the NWT Championship out over on Green Bay earlier this September. They wrapped that tournament up, did a quick turnaround, made it back to northern Minnesota to fish an MWC with his brother Kyle on Cass Lake. Now, Dusty historically fished this tournament with his dad, Dusty and Kyle. Earlier this year, they lost their father. It was great to sort of honor that tradition and Dusty and Kyle fishing this tournament together. And they had a phenomenal tournament, a phenomenal finish. Second place. Dusty has a great story about him and Kyle getting together on this tournament. We definitely highlight the body of water. Cass Lake is a great destination for a lot of people in northern Minnesota. It's a great walleye destination, and I probably don't talk about it enough. So we talk about Dusty, we talk about the whole tournament scene, and we highlight a body of water that is just kind of fun to talk about that deserves a little recognition. So a big conversation here. We cover a lot of great topics. So let's get into it here. We got Dusty Minkie on the JMO Podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. The waterfowl hunting opportunities here in the state of North Dakota are incredible. It's a tradition for so many friends and families to get together and spend this quality time in the field. But to be a great hunter also means to be a great steward of the land. I'm talking about being very respectful to landowners. And don't leave trash in the field. Definitely don't clean your birds and then throw carcasses back in the field. If you do encounter gates, make sure you leave them exactly how you found them, whether that is up or down. Hunting is such a wonderful component to North Dakota's legacy, and we need to keep it that way. So let's all agree this fall to hunt hard, hunt fair, and hunt for tomorrow. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast.
Yeah.
That's good thought. That's good thought for sure. And but let's do this, dude.
Get to work.
Yeah, dude, yeah. Let's do this. It's late September. I don't want to assume too much because I know there's some fall derbies still going on out there, but are you done tournament fishing for the year?
Not yet. I've got one more. Nice. I believe it's October 4th. One I do every year with my good friend, Toby Kovalevog. It's called Walleye Dan's Fishing to End Hunger. So it's a fundraiser event supporting, you know, to end hunger. And it's a big, you know, fall shootout. It's always around that first weekend of October. And we've had so much fun. We've, It's one of those deals in northern Minnesota here. There's so much good competition. And once you come close, like, you know, you come close to Leech Lake Classic, third place. Toby and I have taken third at this Walleye Dan event. And it's like, you just keep, you know, you're addicted to it. Like, I'm not stopping until I win. Like, I got to win one of these. So that's definitely one that's on the bucket list. And it's one we enjoy doing, you know, as friends. And then all the people fishing it are friends. And, you know, somebody wins, you're happy for them. It's a fun event.
Those tournaments just sound like super, super, super fun, where everybody at the rules meeting is just happy to see each other. A lot of backslap, and it's late in the year, so everybody's kind of, you know, kind of just ready to do a fun one. But when takeoff is in the morning, like, the juice has got to be just like at an all-time high.
Yeah, for me, it's fun, and I don't get to pre-fish. You know, I take my time to, and my pre-fish days, you know, for the NWT. So when I do these ones, I tend to just jump in, or if I go maybe a Sunday before the event or evening, like, I don't have a whole lot of time into these just because it's getting busy with work and I've already taken that time, you know, for the year. So like Cass Lake MWC was the weekend after our NWT championship, and I got to fish it with my brother. And we can talk back about this, but what I got to say about these events with the locals is I'm lucky enough, fortunate enough to fish the NWT. A lot of these guys, they're like, oh, I'm going to fish, you know, the MWC and the Walleye Dan. That's when they take their week off of work.
Yeah.
And they fish with their family or friends, and they got their campers and their week off or a cabin rented at a resort, and they're out there, you know, from sun up till sundown every day. Now you're going against these guys that have just, you know, taken one of their vacations of the year to win this tournament, and they've got, so you've got that much more of an, you know, they have a little bit more of an edge on a guy like me that's just trying to jump in and hopefully get lucky, I guess.
And where's that one at? You're talking about this, the Walleye Dan, the End the Hunger tournament. Where's that one at?
So it's on Gull Lake in Brainerd, Minnesota.
Okay. Yep. I've heard of it. I've for sure heard of it. I'm sure it's been made mention of here somewhere along the line, but yeah. Okay.
It's a beautiful lake with a chain of lakes, and then like a main lake. You know, it's got sharp breaks. It's northern Minnesota. It's got some rocks. It's got a lot of weeds. It's, you know, it's kind of like a Lake Pakegama in Grand Rapids, which they have a big walleye shootout too at the end of June every year. And yeah, if that's where a lot of these guys are really good. If you look at the list, like, you know, guys, they can make a pretty decent summer if they fish like the Walleye Shootout in Grand Rapids, the MWC on Cass, the Leech Lake Walleye Classic. And then you got, you know, different tournament trails like the AIM and the MTT. Like, there's so much going on here in Minnesota. And it's actually like, you know, really good kind of a farming league for anglers to grow up and live around here like I did in Minnesota. Like, there's a lot of good options to jump in, and that's what makes for a lot of really stiff competition here in Minnesota, I believe.
For sure, man. You and your brother just fished the MWC in Cass, and I want to get a little bit more detailed into that bite and that tournament a little bit later, but the topic that I kind of want to transition into right now, it's just something that fascinates me. I've talked to a few other guys before, but I want to talk about like getting into a tournament with less pre-fish or no pre-fish. I think this sparks like super fascinating conversation with somebody that has fished tournaments on a high level for as long and as many as you have. I'm just sort of curious on, you know, what your thought process is, sort of a breakdown, like a strategy that you feel like, you know, works when you're getting into one of these. What's the big difference on tournament day for you when you've had like little to no pre-fish.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to a lot is confidence and knowing that we, you know, your history on the water, you know, now I'm into, you know, fishing these lakes for around 20 years now. So a lot of it's confidence, you know, and a lot of it too, for me, is having the right bait, you know. I think having good minnows, good leeches, good crawlers, not necessarily that they want to bite that day, and having reaction baits, it's just learning on what they want to bite that day or what you get confidence in. So, you know, I've had different confidence baits throughout the years, and they kind of tend to like come and go. And what I'm seeing here in Minnesota in these local events where, like you said, I don't pre-fish much. I just kind of go into it with a good attitude and some confidence. But the biggest thing is like, for example, last night, my buddy Toby and I are fishing this walleye Dan coming up, and he goes, man, they bit tonight on reaction baits. Well, last night I went out for a couple hours with my girlfriend. It was a beautiful night on leech. And I go, that's crazy. They're biting reaction baits here too tonight, you know? So, and I showed up at tournaments this year where I'm like, I'm going to win the Grand Rapids walleye shootout, because the two times I did get to pre-fish, I crushed them on this lure. Well, the day of the tournament, they wanted nothing to do with it. And I think a lot of guys, they'll live and die with what they learned in practice.
Yeah.
And I think what you got to do is sometimes just everything you learn, you just might have to squash and just start over. And that might be at 10 a.m. in the morning, you know. And I think a lot of guys might get stuck in the mind track of that. That's what they got to do for the day. That's what they learned in practice. I mean, for example, going back to Green Bay on our championship, the wind blew offshore. I was catching 35, 40 pounds a day. And I'm like, I got to go to the other side of the lake. That's what I would do on Leech Lake. You know, that's what I would do on Cass Lake. But I just could not let it go where my big fish were. And I went for it and I failed. You know, so there's still that sense in me, you know, and I mean, I still caught them. I just, it was just a typical where that cold water blew in and the warm water blew across the lake, and we all predicted it. And then the guys who went across the lake, you know, finished in the top 10, and I had a one day event basically, you know. So, but yeah, I there's just, and I think too much pre-fish, like even for the NWT, it just gets to be a lot. And you tend to have your best days, like your first few days there, you know, it's weird. Yeah. And you try to keep stuff going, or like, for example, a veteran angler friend of ours, he's like, I never even pre-fished up there because I looked at the weather forecast. It's like, oh my God, why didn't I? Why didn't we think about that, you know?
Yeah, I suppose there's, man, this stuff fascinates me. I think there's a lot of learning that comes to me just hearing, you know, the stories about, you know, like the pre-fishing strategies. There's, I think that there's just a lot that goes into that, or a lot of learning that comes from that of like, I derby fish every time I go out, especially by myself. Like I'm trying to emulate, you know, yeah. Or I'm trying to level up, and every time I go out, I'm not fishing for money, but I want to have a killer day out in the water. So I'm learning, I'm picking up on all this stuff just for myself. So I think that stuff is phenomenal, man. But but tell me about Cass. Tell me about this MWC that you had, because we see you on Tour Level Gold. We see you fishing the NWT. I have you on, you know, whenever I can. We talked last after that Sharp tournament this spring, which was brutal for 99% of the field. That was a super fun conversation. But the MWC on Cass, it's right down the road from you, so why wouldn't your name pop up? Tell me the whole story about it.
Yeah, so a little history about the MWC on Cass. I got to fish with my brother this year. It's something that I did for many years with my dad, and, you know, we lost him this spring, so it was pretty special, you know, to fish with my brother. And my brother fished this many years back with a guy named Dan Fuller, who in my mind is one of the best, you know, sticks that you might not hear a whole lot about unless you're in northern Minnesota here, because the guy's a hammer. And so my brother fished with him and learned a lot from him. And just the Fuller brothers in general, just growing up, we got to be buddies with them. It's a long story, but, and it's even another longer story. The guy who actually won the tournament this year and last year, he won it back to back. I fished my first walleye tournament with on Leech Lake. So many years ago. So there's a lot of history, you know, from fishing with my dad to meeting these guys at a young age in college, and then we're all still there fishing, maybe not in the same boats, but how cool is that, you know? So, and then my brother just had a really successful first day on the Bassmaster Opens on Leech. He was in the lead. He's always kind of grown up as a walleye guy, but he veered off in the bass years ago, which can't really blame a guy.
Right, right.
It's not easy, but he made a good run at it, and he's still jumping in some of the open. So it was really cool to see him kind of hop in my boat. And that's always the thing too, is like, who's going to be the captain when you have two captains in the boat, you know? So yeah, so we did quite well together, and he kind of had to calm me down a couple times. He's like, you have no patience. And I'm like, no, I don't. Like, they know we're here, we cast it at them, let's go. I got 10 more spots, you know, we'll come back to this one in 2 hours. And I think sometimes, you know, he wants to maybe fish a little more methodical, and well, whatever we did kind of worked, because we only lost by a pound. So,
yeah, I'm so curious, and I think this is like relatable, but how does that discussion start between the Minky brothers? You know, you guys both fish. When did you guys decide you were going to fish the MWC, or, you know, whose idea was it? Like, how did that discussion start, and what were some of the fishing topics, right? Like, what was it like? All right. You know, who asked who to be in it? And then did you guys ever discuss, like, if you were going to be taking a walleye boat or a bass boat, or who was going to be up on the trolling motor? I'm curious about all that.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So, you know, shortly after my dad passed away, I asked his best friend to do the Leech Lake Classic. Because my brothers fished that together, and it was kind of a family thing here at my house. So I think I'd kind of mentioned it to him then. I'm like, hey, Dad and I do this MWC every fall. You know, we stay at my house. It's very much no pressure, but we're going to give it 100%, you know, when the days come down to it. And he's, you know, no hesitation. He's like, I'm in. So I think it was midsummer. I was signing up for an NWT, and I just put the extra check in the mail and signed us up. I'm like, we're in. But fast forward, when it came down to kind of planning on, you know, what pre-fish was going to happen, you know, I told him I'd go the weekend before. And what actually happened was there was an AIM state championship out there the weekend before on Saturday. So everyone stayed kind of out at the NWT, you know, do we want angler of the year? Everyone stay, let's go to dinner, let's have fun. I go, you know, I've had enough. I love you guys a lot, but I need to get back home. And if I can get home on Friday, I'm going to get up early on Saturday, and I'm going to go see where everybody's fishing. I think that that one day of my eyes on, you know, however many 40 boats were in that championship, that was a big day for me. And it was on the weekend, and I never caught a walleye. I just completely just observed everyone. I think I only seen maybe two fish get caught. But, you know, there's nothing against, you know, I can't go out there and not observe, you know, there's no rule against that. So that's what I did. You know, I related some waypoints, you know, to my brother on the areas, but a lot of the areas year after year are areas that I fish, you know, because that's where I fish. It's kind of weird. Actually, one of the spots where the most of the fish were is an area my dad and I'd fished for the last 4 or 5 years. You know, it's just, they just shift a little bit, or that lake had 2 weeks of pressure. So some of them community holes, you might have to look, you know, they might not be in there. The ones that are in there, they're pressured, you know? So kind of where we found our winning spot was not too far from community holes, but maybe in the middle, if that makes sense.
And when you're fishing Cass Lake late summer, I want to maybe kind of talk about the lake and describe how the lake sets up a little bit. Tell me about Cass Lake. What are the seasonal patterns that show up out there? And how does that, what are some of the bigger, like a big picture descriptive, you know, features of Cass Lake, I guess, is kind of what I'm looking for.
So yeah, Cass is much like the rest of the lakes up here. When I talk about our northern Minnesota lakes, like Leech Lake, Lake Winnebagoche, Cass Lake, they all have something unique. There's all of them have a river coming in and out of them, right? Mm. And it's kind of like a controlled flowage. Most of them have dams on them at some point to kind of regulate the water level, you know. And the way it starts in the spring is a lot of these fish move up shallower. They go in channels and canals and spawn, and then they stick pretty shallow in the spring chasing the shiner spawn on all these lakes. Mm-hmm. So then leading into the summer, you know, now with forward-facing sonar, we've kind of realized a lot of them just stay shallow, you know. They just might change their forage to shiners, to crayfish, or even onto perch. And then some of them kind of will go, you know, suspend and feed on bigger forage, you know, like tulabies or, you know, like some other lakes around here that are deeper that don't really fit that mold. You know, have different styles of bait, but the ones I just mentioned are all about the same, you know, perch, crayfish, spot-tailed shiners.
Yeah.
So, but Cass is really unique because it's got a big bay called Pike Bay, and it's hard. If you got a windshield boat, it's really hard to get in there. So we've seen these one guys had a bunch of 5-gallon pails, and my brother's like, what's up with that? And finally it clicked in my brain. I go, well, they're filling those up to go into Pike Bay so their windshield gets under the bridge.
Yeah, they want to lower their boat in the water. Yeah. They fill them up with water.
Well, I would just fill my live wells. Those guys went, you know, they had a higher windshield, so yeah. I get it, you know. And I've done that type of stuff on Devils, too, little sneaky stuff like that. But anyway, so yeah, then it has, you know, Allen's Bay. Then it goes up into Lake Andrusia, and you can also go into this Wolf Lake. And I think, you know, what I've noticed is, you know, sometimes when these lakes get so pressured, you know, you got to kind of expand your horizon and try to be sneaky and just get away from that pressure, you know, and that might have played into some factor this year with some other teams. We stuck our time to the main lake and just tried to get our baits in front of as many fish as possible and just see what they wanted to be eating that day. But more about Cass, and I've fished it, you know, since like 2006, I won one of my first tournaments there in FLW League. But yeah, it's just got really steep breaks, like very steep. Like it goes from 5 feet to 30 fast and around the whole lake. You know, there's not a whole lot of rocks in there. It's just a lot of like sand grass, and then it goes right down to steep, steep breaks. So
yeah, the structure on that lake is fascinating. I've only been out there a couple times, but it's just from like a map study perspective, it's a really cool lake to look at.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, for you to sort of slowly kind of ease into, you observed a little bit the weekend before. Did you have any pre-fish at all, like days before the tournament?
No, my brother kind of took care of that. He's a business owner, and he just kind of slotted a few days off. But he only pre-fished part of Wednesday and Thursday. And I snuck out there, I think, maybe just like one or two more afternoons after work, you know. So I didn't have much time on the lake. And I actually could have went out that Sunday, you know, after that Saturday, but I was like, man, I just spent how many days in a boat? Like,
You were coming right off the NWT championship. Yeah.
Just, it's not bad to get a day off, you know, like, and get back into work mode, you know? So I hit the road for work, and just when I fish better when my work is done, if that makes sense. If my customers are happy and my bosses are happy, then I'm happy. Then I can put my mind at ease to fish. So, and I love to fish these events on the weekends. Just, I like to stay busy. You know, if I don't stay busy, I go idle or I do something, you know, that, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
And I want to win one of these events, but I also know that I do have a daytime job and I can't do it, you know, do it all the time. So, but yeah, no. So it was a unique kind of pre-fish for him. And honestly, his pre-fish, you know, wasn't that great. And then a part of it too is like, you're not showing your cards, right? So it's like, we figured some things out and it's like just trying to expand, trying to find something better.
From a pre-fishing perspective, is it like, how would you describe the importance of just going out? Maybe your pre-fish isn't all that good, but it helps you because you eliminated a bunch of water and now it's narrowed down the rest of the lake that you're going to hammer on tournament day. And you always want your best catches. You don't want your best catches to happen during pre-fish anyways, right? So it's like, I'm curious how that, you know, how you would describe that and maybe how that played a factor in the confidence you and your brother had going into this tournament, that super abbreviated pre-fish and really the little bit of time on the water that Kyle had wasn't overly productive by way of like, you know, catching fish. So like, you know, but I'm sort of curious about how you feel about that or just sort of explanation that you have on that topic. And then maybe how those discussions went the day before, you know, day one of this cast tournament. Like, what were you guys talking about in terms of like how you were going to fish and what you had gathered from your pre-fish?
So just listening to you talk there, I learned something very important at the championship. I went against all the rules over all the years. And then whenever anybody calls me and wants a fishing report up north here on Leech in Cass, which is weekly,
yeah.
I go fish where the wind's blowing. You know, that's my number one tip. Like, don't be scared of the wind. The wind's good, right? So what did I do on Green Bay? I didn't listen to myself. I just, you know, and it's even worse on a Great Lake, right? So one thing I did after that mishap at Green Bay, and it wasn't that I failed. I mean, I caught some fish, but it ain't too good. But I was like, man, I looked at the weather forecast, and I'm like, we got a rare south or an east wind for the tournament. And that's kind of what helped me decide, because that's not a normal wind in northern Minnesota. Usually it's westerly or in the fall, like a northwest, or even some days we get a strong south wind,
yeah.
You know? So it kind of eliminated a lot of like typical spots having an opposite rare wind, right? So in pre-fish, one of the nights I strolled across the spot, you know, and I just panned over there with my active target two. And I just told Kyle, I'm like, I found where a lot of fish are. I don't know if we could win the tournament there, but I made like one cast and caught a 25. And then I went back and checked it and I caught another mid 20 inch fish fairly easy. And I'm like, I'm just going to stay out of there. And then just hearing reports of guys catching them in 3 feet of water, guys catching them down in 30 feet of water, and then having him use his bass boat to kind of go into Pike Bay. And I kind of ran him on a few wild goose missions, like go way up into this lake, go way up into there. And you know, so he eliminated some water while I kind of checked spots that were, and which is stupid because I'm in my boat that's wrapped, you know.
Everybody can see you.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, they're probably like, oh, Minky ain't a threat. He doesn't pre-fish much. But anyways, so yeah, that's kind of how we broke it down. And then, you know what, and I get back to my house and our buddy Caden was with, and we just kind of, Caden's a good stick that's traveled with us for years. And we just kept, you know, kept game planning, and pretty soon, you know, the tournament rolled around, and I told him what my thoughts were with the wind, and I wanted to start here, and he was fine with that, and we just started putting fish in the boat. Actually, our starting spot, I look to my left, and there's this local kid Newell. And then to my right, we kind of split the D, went right in between them. And then they both kind of started to sandwich us in. But it was, I think we caught three or four fish in a real fast way. Yeah. And we're all kind of looking at each other. And I told Kyle, I go, I don't know what you're thinking, but I don't like this much pressure. Let's go. And he's like, okay. And I go, let's let them fish there a little bit, and then let's let it settle down, and we'll come back. And that's what we did. And we came back, and we upgraded. Upgrading was allowed. So we weighed in 19-some pounds that first day. And we were mixing it up, casting reaction baits and, bigger minnows like chubs and red tails. That's always been a big thing on casts. You know, my buddy Toby Kovalevog, yeah, legendary out there for rigging chubs. And so we knew they were there. And sometimes you just don't see them on the screen, but you know they're there because those breaks are so sharp, you know. Mm. So it was a big thing, too, was like positioning the boat right and just having confidence that they were there. And it's not so much as we were just spotlighting them and, like it wasn't 100% our deal that we had to watch the lure go over them. You know, it was just kind of knowing that they were there.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. The waterfowl hunting opportunities here in the state of North Dakota are incredible. It's a tradition for so many friends and families to get together and spend this quality time in the field. But to be a great hunter also means to be a great steward of the land. I'm talking about being very respectful to landowners. And don't leave trash in the field. Definitely don't clean your birds and then throw carcasses back in the field. If you do encounter gates, make sure you leave them exactly how you found them, whether that is up or down. Hunting is such a wonderful component to North Dakota's legacy, and we need to keep it that way. So let's all agree this fall to hunt hard, hunt fair, and hunt for tomorrow. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. To your point about the wind, I got a question for you. Like on these wind-driven northern Minnesota lakes, again, like most of my questions, kind of a two-pronger here, but do you feel like the wind moves fish, activates fish that are already there? Like how soon are you willing to adjust to a wind switch? And what I'm curious about is like, did that east wind show up before you went to bed, you know, the night before? The, you know, day one, so it had all night to blow and establish, you know, what you were thinking, or like, I'm just curious on that question, like whether it's Leash or Cass or Winnie or any of those Northern Minnesota lakes, you know, how quickly do you feel like a wind switch can play into a wind driven bite when, you know, when it switches? So anyways, yeah, I just want to kind of throw that in your lap and just kind of dig into your head a little bit. Going back to like going to bed the night before, you had decided that you were going to heed that east wind. Describe that a little further anyway.
So yeah, the east and south, that rare wind was kind of predominant for the week. It wasn't like strong by any means, but it, that's why I was confident the fish would hold up there. And the way you got to kind of look at some of these lakes is they're kind of like a giant river. So it's like current, like if you go into a narrow spot of the lake, you ever notice all the bait, you know? Or like last night I was just out fun fishing with my girlfriend and I'm like, this pinch point in this bay has so much bait and there was muskies all over. And then I caught like a 27-inch walleye. And then I had made kind of a note. I said to her and I'm like, you see this? It's like a slick in the water. I'm like, that's like a river current, you know? So you have to kind of look at where these waters are kind of pushing and moving. And it's a big thing on the Great Lakes is current, is just try to read the current, watch your temperatures. It wasn't so much watching the temperatures as much as I was on Green Bay, but I think that's what, you know, kind of kept our confidence, is that we knew that wind wasn't changing. Not that you can't go offshore and catch fish. I think the biggest thing the waves do is camouflages you and your boat, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You can get closer to these fish.
Yeah, we have zebra mussels. And, I mean, it's pushing warm water to shore, which usually attracts bait and can, you know, push more of the aggressive fish up in that scenario, you know? So when those fish set up a certain way, go shallow, you know, in a windblown shoreline, they're there to feed, or, you know, they might go rest down deep, or they're not in a feeding mode, but you're going to want to be there at that time. And I think that's what puts you in the best, you know, situation is knowing the fish are there, the wind are blowing in there. So you're a little bit camouflaged, you know, so it's all those factors.
I'm curious about this, like how quickly, and this is kind of a hypothetical, but like when the wind does say go through like a legitimate switch, not just a subtle switch, but let's just say it reverses. And then you, at what point in time do your gears start turning of like, of making that adjustment to sort of heed that wind? Is it in real time, like when it happens, or is it like you need a few hours of that wind to sort of give you confidence, or is it a full like overnighter that you need to see to start having confidence to start checking out that new wind?
Yeah, I think it takes a little time. Or like one thing I noticed, like, you know, like a thunderstorm rolls in, like day two on Cass Lake really shut down. And talking to my friends who won, we were kind of hoping for a late day flurry like we did on day one. And it just never happened for us. But they would have not, we would have probably taken first if they wouldn't have got into their late day flurry. Let's put it that way. So by talking to my friend, they got that late day flurry. So the wind didn't change or anything. They just got on some fresh fish and made it happen. And they were biting, right? But to go back to like Green Bay, the wind had switched, but I was still catching them. But I was like, I know by 2 days of that wind blowing offshore that it ain't going to be good. And I was kind of watching an app on my phone that kind of shows you some water temperature, but it's not totally like trustable. It's like an estimate, you know?
Sure.
So I was trying to estimate without running across the bay, basically. I wanted to stay out of that wind, and which was a shame on me. Basically, it came down to me not putting the time in over there to have the confidence. And theoretically, I should have ran south instead of north. But I was still catching them the day before, which was still an offshore wind. But it wasn't until that second day of offshore wind where it really affected it. See, now here on a northern Minnesota lake, that you can almost throw that kind of out because we don't have that much cold water moving around, but you can also use it. I mean, it's all somewhat true, you know, the big lake, small lake. I mean, it all moves around and the currents move and the bait moves and it's, but I would have to say on these lakes, it's not like, oh, the wind just switched. Let's go run to here. I think it takes a little time for things to kind of load up. But they might not usually be far from those spots, or they're there. Like I learned on Green Bay, they're there. They're just not up off the bottom where you can see them. So like here, I just thought of this actually. So on a Great Lake, when it blows offshore, the deep cold water moves low. And then not moves low, but it pushes up high against the shore and then it stays up and then pushes out, you know? So I don't know if they're laying in those rocks or down, maybe the warmer water is down on the bottom now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So then what it does is it fluffs them up because the warm water is on the top over on the other side of the lake. So it probably does the same sort of thing, even on a smaller northern Minnesota lake where,
oh yeah,
it just shifts, you know, so they're holding tight on an offshore side. Now when the wind switches, they still might be on the bottom, but it just in a bit of time, it'll move. It'll get those fish moving up and active off the bottom, I think.
Tell me a little bit about catching the fish on cast. What were some of the confidence baits that you had rigged up that you were cycling through, you and Kyle were cycling through, and just sort of how it went to sort of figure out what, you know, the fish that you caught anyways, like what were they going to bite on? What were some of the light bulb moments, if there was any?
Yeah. You know, the big thing in northern Minnesota here, and I think with forward facing sonar, you know, to talk about this a little bit before I jump into that, is that there was so many guys that were so dominant up north here for a couple of years because they really got the forward facing down before some of us. And I'd have to say I consider myself one of the older guys now. I was maybe one of the first guys that had forward facing sonar on my tournament boat, but I still might be on the back end trend of having the confidence or trying to get my mindset, you know, completely in it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So there was some younger guys in northern Minnesota here, you know, like a guy up here that I look at that's done very well. Will Pappenfuss, and you know, there's a whole lot of names. But he was one of the ones that was kind of dominating. And then, like, even on our tour, like Max Wilson, now you're starting to see everybody's getting good at this thing, and it's kind of filtering out the leaderboard a little bit, you know.
Oh, yeah,
it's like, oh, where did that guy come from? Or, you know, there's these young kids that are doing real well up north here. It's kind of cool to see, actually.
The list of names that shouldn't surprise you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like showing up in the top 10, the top 20 is getting bigger.
Yeah. I also think it's spreading things out. For example, 2 years ago on this Walleye Dan tournament coming up, the legendary guides on Gull Lake won the tournament long line in chubs, big fresh minnows.
Yeah,
they didn't have a live scope turned on, and that could happen. It didn't happen last year. Will and Nitty won it, you know, chucking on the live scope. But it could happen again. So I want to feel like my brother and I kind of did more of a hybrid where we'd seen the fish there, got the confidence, and then we were rigging chubs, you know, through them. And reaction baits like a, you know, smaller Northland puppet minnow. Didn't work all the time, but you get a couple of bites a day where that you throw it in a pile of fish and there's always one guy in that group that's like, I'm going to, oh, can't swim injured past me, you know?
Was it a lot of schooling fish? Like, does Cass Lake set up where you're looking for schools of fish?
Yeah. I think like any lake up north here, like there's some big schools. And then, you know, even on the Great Lakes and stuff, it seems like the bigger fish kind of separate themselves from the smaller fish. So it's kind of like a playground, right? So like the big guys that are kind of cool, there's a couple of them just standing over there. Well, the rest of the aggressive pack, like the 20 to 24 inchers, are in a bigger school. And the kind of the lazier, older people in the playground are not so much into playing on the playground. They're just like, they don't want to be by the young puppies, baby, you know? So,
yeah,
but they're not far from each other. You know what I mean? If that's a good explanation.
No, it is. And it's worth, you know, I probably should have brought this up earlier, but just to clarify, the MWC, it's a live weigh-in. And by Minnesota rules, you know, each angler can, what, only have one over 20?
Yes.
So you guys are fishing for a tournament bag of what, five fish?
Five fish and one per guy over 20, and culling was allowed.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you are kind of looking for, you know, dual patterns. We've talked about this before. Anywhere that there's a slot for a live weigh-in tournament, you know, where you guys are looking for the biggest fish in the lake, two of them, but you gotta also be, if you're going to be competitive, you got to be dialed in to all of it, meaning, you know, where those 19 and 3/4 inch unders are at, if you can, right? I mean, so yeah. Anyway, that I'm glad we had to bring that up at some point, but yeah, man, I love it. So then keep telling me, you know, like day two. So after day one, where were you guys sitting? What was your weight and where were you guys sitting? And then what do you feel like you learned that was setting you up for day two?
So we were tied for second with the guys who ended up winning it, Fehrenbacher and Zolfman, the guy who I fished a tournament way back in like 2005 with. And they had won it the year before. But in first place was some of my other good friends, Colt Anderson and Ben Olson, really good Northern sticks up here, boy. And one thing too is like, I got all my buddies, like Chuck and Toby and my buddy Zach and all these guys fishing the tournament. And then like Colt and Benny, and we're all kind of calling each other before the event. Hey, you want to team up? Want to kind of share some info? And always kind of what I've done with my dad, or kind of what I do up here, is it's like, man, I'm not pre-fishing much. I don't feel like it's not fair that you guys are taking the week off and I'm going to just, you know, jump in with my brother and we barely pre-fished. Like, I don't feel like it's fair to you guys. And I don't feel like I want to show up on your spot if I didn't put the same effort of work in, you know?
Right on.
So I've always opted to kind of just go on my own, or maybe run some ideas off of my buddies like Toby and Zach and Chuck, but it's not like it's kind of weird. It gets secretive, but then everybody kind of gets nervous and it's like, oh yeah, try Buck Bar, or, you know, like it's kind of a joke actually. It's like, why don't we just all shut up and go fishing?
Yeah, go fishing. it's more fun when you go out there, like trying to beat those guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's more fun to have that, like the competitive juices going against your friends versus like,
yeah,
you know, oh, you kind of got to take your foot off the gas when everybody's sharing a little bit of information. You creep into a spot, maybe they're there. It's like, you know, yeah, it just doesn't have the same feel. I like the idea of everybody just putting their head down against each other.
It's a lot of doc talk. And to be honest, I wish there was like a limited practice on these events. It'd be kind of nice, but I get it. You know, some local guides or somebody's up there for the week with their family. And like, what are they going to do? Sit on shore, you know, or pick a new lake to guide on. It's kind of not fair. I get it. But no. So then going into the day two, you know, Olson and Anderson, you know, two household names up here, always on the top. They were in the lead. And didn't surprise me, but I told Kyle, I go, if we are consistent and we can match today's weight, we have a very good chance of taking this thing home just from fishing it over the years. Like, it's not easy to mimic a 2-day, you know, close to 20-pound bag on that lake. If you can, you can win. Obviously, the guys who did had 19 both days. So we elected to start in our spot. And to my surprise, those two local sticks that I was worried about having to fish against there never showed up at the start. I think they might have filtered through there throughout the day, but we had it all to ourselves, and we had our fish. We had all of our wave fish in the boat by 9:30, and then we went into a serious lull. And then we went into kind of a serious, how do we leave here? And I'm like, well, we got to let this place rest. And we got other spots to run around and upgrade some of these unders. You know, these unders over here were weighing 2.5 pounds, but they're real tricky to catch. You know, they're full. So, you know, you tend to catch the skinny ones for a reason.
Sure.
They're hungry.
Yeah. But I'm curious about that. I'm curious about that first couple hours of the day when you pull into your A spot on day two and nobody else pulls in. Like, how do you try to capitalize on that the way you guys did?
Well, like in your mind, you think they're going to be there, right? So on day one, we actually found some new stuff as we just fished further down the spot. And, you know, obviously fish don't like pressure, so they kind of move around. And there's little, little nooks and crannies on those steep breaks where they think they're kind of hiding in. But, you know, if you get the right angle with your boat, you can kind of see them. And just trying to make a longer cast or get your line out there further, if that makes sense, without giving it all away. But just try not, it's a fine line, and try not to spook them and be there, I guess. So we knew we found a couple spots off the spot, but them not being there, got us to fish the whole, we got to swipe at the whole area before anybody ever came in, so...
Yeah.
So, you know, the spot we kind of found down from the spot on day one ended up being where we caught, you know, I think one was just under 6 and one was just over 6. And then on day one, we had like a 7 and a 5.5, you know. So like anytime I've been on cast, if you can get your two overs around 6 pounds, or like the guys did on day one, they had two identical 8 pounders for their overs. That's what's got them 21 pounds.
That's a huge deal.
So like, some people too get so freaked out about those unders, like, oh, we got to have 2.5 pound unders. You know, like for me, it's like I play more of a game of like, let's see how many fish we can get in the boat. Or that's where guys might be a little better than me. Like, oh, that I can see on my graph that that's a mid 20 inch fish, you know, but it's hard to tell if it's 21 or 18, you know. So, or how fat it is, you know what I mean? So, it's tough to strategize that. I think a lot of it comes down to just trying to catch as many fish as you can. But basically on day two, we went in a lull. I think we only caught 2 or 3 fish the rest of the day and never upgraded. And actually some of our fish coughed up, I would say, 0.5 pound of, I think they had some bigger perch in their system. So it didn't cost us the event by any means, but, you know, the longer you have a fish in the live well, they're more susceptible to, you know, puke up what they got in there.
Yeah, there's probably just no avoiding that. A lot of times they're puking it up when you're trying to net them, too, sometimes. So it's...
Yeah. And I think you could try to alter them a little with doing some fizzing or maybe they were uncomfortable with the other fish, or I had my minnows in there, you know, like, I don't know, you know.
Who knows.
So, you know, sometimes too, your live well, it just seems like I would like a live well that was more like a jacuzzi, you know, just like freaking air coming everywhere, you know. It's like yes. We're trying to, at one point in one of the days, the live well quit working and I blew a fuse. So I was down there working on it while he was fishing. Yeah.
Gotta keep him alive.
And going back to your question too, we decided to use my boat, the Ranger, because you can win a little more money on the Ranger Cup. So that was kind of the deciding factor. And
that makes sense.
And if any wind picked up, you know, like, and him and I run the same graphs, and I don't know, I think we would have been fine running either boat, honestly, but.
Yeah. But how do you handle it, right? This day and age, fish move, spots change. When you roll into a spot and there's nobody else there, it's like, I could see myself almost feeling a little bit of pressure. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like now I actually got to make good on this. That's pressure that I didn't even need.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes any sense. You've done it a long time. You probably don't feel that way. But.
Well, yeah, like making that 30-mile run up in Green Bay and no one else was doing it. I was like, oh, everybody else knows. But I'm going to go for it because that's what, you know, the caliber of fish I was on. But I think it's just having confidence. It's getting your bait in front of a lot of fish, you know, like, you know, not getting too frustrated and not making excuses of like, oh, there's so many perch and bait fish, they're not going to eat mine. there's always that fish that you present something in front of them, they're gonna have a hard time with temptation. I mean, we all do, even as humans. Yeah. You know, like I've had a hard time, like for some reason, there's been a lot of dessert lately where I've been, like Dewey's wife Val, and everywhere I've gone, and I don't think I've said no once, so I might be a little chunky. I might be a little chunkier, you know. So just think of me as that fish that's out there that's gonna take dessert.
Yeah, dude. I'd be easy to catch too if I was a walleye. I'd be easy to catch. Yeah, no doubt about it, man.
There's no way I would grow to a 28 incher. That's for sure.
So you guys spent all day grinding. You had a good bag in the live well, but you were grinding probably optimistically all day for like an upgrade. Like an upgrade would have been nice. So tell me about weighing.
I kept telling him, I said, I think we're one bite away from, and he had one of those new Bubba scales, and I was like, get back and weigh him. What do we got? You know, like in reality, like we don't really need to, you know, no, like, but you know, like if we happen to catch one, it would be nice to know, you know, what to throw out or where we're at, you know?
Yep.
And I was like, dude, we need one more bite. Like if it's an under, or if it's an upgrade on the over, like I feel like we're one bite away. I go, I know we're doing good, man. And we know the scale's about a pound off. So we were sitting like 17 on his Bubba scale. So we knew it was like 18 on the scale at the MWC. And then I seen him cough up a few fish. And that's when I kind of got a little, you know, let's get him up there. Let's go. You know, my brother's like, calm down. But I'm like, we can't afford for them to cough up another fish or one of these to die. You know, like,
yeah.
I just get nervous and I get fast. And one thing I've always done over the years too is people are watching the weigh-in from their phone. They're coming up trying to shake your hand. Congrats, you got this. No, it's never over until you got the trophy in your hand, in my mind. And I've always lived and stuck with that. And I'm like, I just said, just tell me when Fehrenbacher and Zoltman have weighed in. And all of a sudden they go, oh, everybody's face just, yeah, they got you beat. See, I knew it.
So tell me about the weigh-in. Did you guys come in early at all? How soon did you guys come in, and were you sitting in first for how long, and how did that go?
Yeah, no, my boat doesn't come in early. If anything, I've had weight deductions a couple times now because of my tardiness. We were cast until the last minute, 50, 80 yards out from coming in. So if we were not giving up, that's not in the vocab right of the Minky tribe. But so we tried, man, and we just couldn't. We caught a few fish towards the end of the day. They didn't help us. It was like 21 inch or whatever, you know, or small. But yeah, then we went in, and you know, my brother and I were putting the fish in the bag and getting them up there, and we were in first for a long time. And I just kind of honestly sat in the boat with him, kind of put our rods away, and you know, we just kind of reminiscing about the day and you know, thinking about my dad. And yeah, I mean, thought we kind of had it, you know, and it was a pretty cool feeling to be able to spend a couple days like that with my brother, and to think that we were that close. It was pretty special.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, dude. And tell me about your brother. Like, how does he fish? He's living in the bass world, you know, competitively. He's fishing high-level bass tournaments. But fishing in the boat with him, what are some things that you guys feed off of each other? You know, what are some maybe some techniques or things that are kind of his specialty that's really fun to watch, you know, or maybe that you learn from just as brothers fishing in the boat on competition day like that together?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like he was using some different knots and lighter weights, you know, like that's another thing too, is if there's not enough wind and you cast on top of these fish, you can spook them. No matter if you're casting a bobber, a light jig or anything, like a lot of it's a placement of, you know, where you're casting. So that's kind of something I learned with him. And just like, for example, you know, how a bass guy just flips into the, up by a tree and it just barely just slides into the water, you know, mm-hmm. when I'm more the guy of like that guy that just plops it up in the air and it just hits the water, you know. So that was kind of one thing I learned with him is just the placement of maybe not splashing your bait right on their head or just kind of moving it into them, you know, and then having the confidence of him, you know, like we would switch off, you know, from the front troll motor to the back. I would take his fish in the net, unhook him, give him my rod, you know, those things, like as far as teamwork goes, I don't think he could have worked any better. Luckily, you know, nothing came off in the net. I mean, I think we had a few fish break off that he might have thought were pike. I don't necessarily think so, but, you know, he had some lighter line on and some smaller hooks. When I kind of went with old school, a little heavier line, a little bigger hooks, you know, and then, yeah, I don't know. I think we worked real great together, but definitely, you know, a bass style, you know, mind, but he at heart growing up, I mean, the guy's a walleye stick and
for sure
he's done real well in the local tournaments up here, no matter if it's bass or walleye, you know, he's always good no matter what, but I think we'll definitely, that was not the last time we're going to fish together. So,
oh yeah, dude, you guys gotta find time, whether it's that exact same tournament, if you can make it work.
Yeah.
Or just, yeah, dude, it's super cool to see that, or, you know, any, you know, anybody that you see in the industry when fishing with family and all that, like that's, you know, like I said before, I think that's super relatable and inspirational to so many people. Cause that's how your first tournament almost inevitably would ever go. It's not like a transactional relationship until you go pro, you're meeting people, you kind of, you know, you see people eye to eye. It's like, you know, we should share information because, you know, that could give us a great advantage against a big tournament field. But no, like you guys are fishing this tournament like anybody would, like, you know, your brothers, it's family. And you know, that's just how people would get started out anyways. And you guys are super deep. You guys are in your prime, but you started young, like you're pretty deep into your careers. Like, you know, yeah, like I can totally understand how you guys don't fish every tournament together, but man, finding time to fish together. And like you had historically with your dad, that's such a big deal.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, it's just awesome to anytime that, you know, you see that continuing on.
Yeah. And one other thing I've thought about lately too, is that, we did good. We had success and we should do it again. But I also think I got to a point in my life, how important it is to take the younger generation out. I thought about it after this year and, you know, so many people gave back to me and taking me out and putting their time in and showing me their tricks and taking me to tournaments. And then basically I got my dad into it in a weird way, you know, so I think, you know, going forward, you know, two captains like Kyle and I, we might be better off too, like still fishing as a team, but maybe bringing our little cousins or, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, dude. Dude. Yeah. 100%, man. More minkies, the better. And
I see so many kids, you know, that are into fishing and fishing off the docks and, you know, and their parents aren't maybe so much into fishing. It's just, I think it's time to start giving back a little more, you know.
I just think about the rich conversations that you guys had. Like, you know, you guys probably had some laid back personal conversations, but I bet there were certain times when you guys were breaking down a pass and you know, that you were like, I bet you there was just some like mega high level fishing conversation going on. And it's like, you guys, you'll probably forget half of those conversations. And it's great to hear. I'm kind of glad that you talked about, you know, like your brother. You know, you guys weren't fishing identical setups throughout the day. I mean, how often that would ever happen, unless you feel like you have something like a pattern so 100% dialed in that you're only going to use one technique on one rod and reel setup and line, you know, configuration. But the fact that you guys are trying different things, but he, you know, he has confidence going more finesse. And you talk about breaking fish off. I suppose, you know, if he was in this conversation, there's probably an argument to be made that, you know, he maybe got those bites.
Yeah.
Purely because he was fishing finesse. And yeah, he might have broke off a couple of fish, but you know, there's tremendous balance in that. There's a ton of give and take, and it's great that he was fishing confidence with that setup and probably got some bites. It's or arguably got those bites that you weren't, you know, with a 12-pound leader and a 3/8 ounce jig, you know. And maybe he's throwing, I mean, I'm just throwing this as like off the top of my dome, but maybe he's throwing a drop shot, like you said, on a setup that's lighter, you know. But I mean, there's, that's what you guys go through. That's what I just think is so fun to sort of hear about you guys kind of doing that. You're working off of each other. He probably responded to, you know, just seeing what you were going to run. And then he brought a few setups accordingly, you know, and vice versa. You knew that he was going to be the finesse guy. So you knew for sure you could lean into the puppet minnow deal. You know, and it's like, man, I just love hearing about that stuff and thinking about that stuff. It's like, how do I do better in my own boat on my own tournament day, which is just when I go out by myself, dude. Every day's tournament day for me. And I think a lot of people, it's like, I just want to, whether I want to do it for myself, but, you know, I have too many of these conversations to take credit for anything I've ever done. I've talked to too many of you guys that like everything I do is just trying to like regurgitate or emulate, you know, what you guys are doing out there. But yeah, dude, like this had just happened to me recently. I just didn't feel like I had nearly enough finesse stuff, rigged up. It's like, I got to the end of the day and I just didn't feel like while I was fishing, my time was going to be spent like retying a couple of rods. But, you know, after, you know, 3 hours of fishing and I maybe could only be out there for another hour and a half or whatever, like I should have just taken the time or should have had the forethought ahead of time to just have a couple of, you know, a little bit more finesse, you know, or something a little bit lighter, just, you know, something a little bit more wispy, like Tom Boley would say, like, because I was just getting the back of my crawler bit off, you know, and I just wasn't getting the bites that were there. I was leaving a lot on the table. But what aren't we touching on? What are some other great topics, you know, talking about, like, you know, the late summer patterns in northern Minnesota, you know, tournament fishing, you know, with little to no pre-fish. I just think that stuff, those are all super like great topics all in themselves. And we're trying to, you know, cover a whole bunch of it here with you. Anything else that sort of comes to mind that sort of tells a little bit more of the story here about what it takes to get second place, in a northern Minnesota MWC stacked field?
I think more than anything, we had some good confidence rolling in. I think we had a third guy in the boat, you know, that really helped.
For sure, man. Dad was there for sure.
Yeah. But no, I think it was just working together, working hard, and just, you know, there's a little bit of luck, but there's a lot of hard work. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, like preparation and stuff, like just the older you get, it's like, man, like, you know, like Dewey and John and some guys, they're so confident that they don't even pack the trolling rods. But I'm still the thinker that's like, man, I've seen it happen. One of these tournaments are going to get one rigging chubs. Or I always want to pull up the crankbaits on cast and be like, let's get them planer boards like 200 feet out. And, you know, just try to do something a little different than the rest. You know, you got to think 98% of the crowd is doing things a certain way. And just the biggest thing for me sometimes is just think a little bit out of the box, you know, without me telling on the podcast certain things, just little tweaks, you know, little, it's not necessarily far off from, you know, what people are saying or doing out there. It's just maybe making a further cast or a lighter weight or, you know, simple little tweaks. And just, the biggest thing I think my brother and I brought in was confidence. We knew, you know, we were just going to put our heads down and do good. And I think we fed off each other, you know?
Yeah. As far as gear, this might be the final, including a little bit of gear conversation. You can pick, but I just want like some kind of a good gear recommendation. Like when it, like things that matter, hooks, weights, line, leader, you know, leader material, rod selection, rod action, reels. Like when it comes to the gear that you have in your boat, you know, and I'm almost always curious about things that maybe you've changed your mind on or had some type of an evolution on. Like, what are some things that you're doing now that you feel like are pretty important to you?
Well, I'm pretty open on that as far as line and rods. You know, I'm running Phoenix rods. They got a feather line of rods out there, really nice. They're kind of more known West Coast bass rods, but wow, they're phenomenal. And then I'm I have like all Shimano Vantford reels. Like I like them. Some, you know, people have their opinions on their reels and I've tried other brands. I just have always, I'm not sponsored, you know, by any means from a reel brand, but it's just, it's something I like. So I stick with that. I'm kind of a mutt when it comes to line, you know, like I don't really have a line sponsor. So I'm always kind of playing with stuff there and I've got a few of my favorites narrowed down.
Are you a mono guy or a braid guy?
You know what? That's one thing I'm not, I was casting something on cast that people, I don't know, that might keep in my pocket, but I wasn't using, I wasn't using what you'd technically think or what, but no, most of my rods have braid, but I guess what I'll say is you maybe play with your, you know, leader lengths a little bit, but then all of a sudden you catch your leaders dwindle down to, let's say 3 feet and you're still catching them. It's like, I think more than anything, us fishermen are more in our own minds. I mean, we're dealing with something with a pea-sized brain, you know, like they're just eating, right? So, but yeah, no, like I you know, I use a lot of like sometimes 6 to 10 pound braid. And then I found I try to find what casts the best or doesn't have the most wind knots or, you know, another trend I've seen is like, we're using bobbers, but I don't know, the fish, it was just like, you know, the reaction baits a few years ago, like the fish did not want them. And now they're starting to look at them again, or, you know, maybe it's now we know what the situation to throw into. So yeah. And then it's just like, I'm always liking having the best hooks. Obviously everything's like tungsten now, whether it comes down to your rigging weights or your jigs. I mean, it's, they're smaller, you're getting a better read off your graph, you know? So I like that type of stuff. And I run a lot of Northland and I really like the Schmeltnader heads. And now they're coming out with the tungsten line of jigs that, that's unreal, you know. I'm like, and the size is printed on there, and so there's just so much. It's like you turn the corner and there's something new. And but I think, you know, at the same time too, I'm one of those guys that's not afraid to go back to a little bit of old school.
Yeah.
And another lure I've been talking about this year, and I've caught fish on it, and it's made by Bill Lewis. It's called Depth Strike, Depth Charge. It's had a name change, but it's like a lipless crankbait that sinks, and it looks identical to a minnow. And I just, you know, got to tell people that I would go try that out. Just saying, like, it comes in like 3 different sizes. And yeah, it's it might be a little bit of a sleeper. I know it, you know, it always doesn't work. Like, you might tie it on and go, oh, Dusty just sold us on this thing. It doesn't work. Well, it works. It's just, you know, might have to be the right scenario or body of water or the right time, but I know that it works. So
appreciate the time, Dusty. As always, great conversation, and we'll be in touch. All right, we'll talk to you.
All right, take care.